Namaskrityanagam Chayvanarottamam Devam Saraswati Vyasam Dutodayam Mudirayat Nasta Prayetsu Badretsu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamaslokya Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Panchakapata rubhyascha kripasindhu bhavacha patitanam papavevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. Shri Prabhupada ki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, Text Number 34. The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Behavior of a Perfect Person. Shoka Moha. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. The original cause of all of these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. Repeat after me, please.
Those in human society
who are intelligent
should give up the original cause of lamentation,
illusion, fear, anger,
attachment, poverty,
and unnecessary labor.
The original cause of all of these
is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Here is the difference between Vedic civilization and the modern demonic civilization. Vedic civilization concerned itself with how to achieve self-realization. And for this purpose, one was recommended to have a small income to maintain body and soul together. Society was divided into Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. And the members of the society would limit their endeavors to meeting their minimum demands. The Brahmanas in particular would have no material desires. Because the Kshatriyas had to rule the people, it was necessary for them to have money and prestige. But the Vaishyas were satisfied with agricultural produce and milk from the cows, and if by chance there were excess, trade was allowed. The Sudras were also happy, for they would get food and shelter from the three higher classes. In the demonic civilization of the present day, however, there's no question of Brahmanas or Kshatriyas. They are only so-called workers and a flourishing mercantile class who have no goal in life. According to Vedic civilization, the ultimate perfection of life is to take sannyas. But at the present moment, people do not know why sannyas is accepted. Because of misunderstanding, they think that one accepts sannyas to escape social responsibilities. But one does not accept sannyas to escape from responsibility to society. Generally, one accepts sannyas at the fourth stage of spiritual life. One begins as brahmachari, then becomes a grihastha, a vanaprastha, and finally, a sannyas, take advantage of the duration of one's life by engaging oneself fully in self-realization. Sannyas does not mean begging. Sannyas does not mean begging from door to door to accumulate money for sense gratification. However, because in Kali Yuga, people are more or less prone to sense gratification, immature sannyas is not recommended. Sri Rupa Goswami writes in the Nectar of Instruction, Achyahara Payasyascha prajapa niyamagraha jnana sangasya loyamcha sadbir bhaktir vinashati. Translation: one's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessary about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. A sannyasi should have an institution meant to preach Krishna consciousness. He need not accept money for himself. We recommend that as soon as money accumulates in Krishna conscious movement, 50% of it should be invested in printing books and 50% for expenditures, especially in establishing centers all over the world. The managers of Krishna conscious movement should be extremely cautious in regards to this point. Otherwise, money will be the cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachments, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. When I was alone in Vrindavan, I never attempted to construct mats or temples. Rather, I was fully satisfied with the small amount of money I could gather by selling back to God here. And thus I would provide for myself and also print the literature. When I went to foreign countries, I lived according to the same principle. But when Europeans and Americans began to give money profusely, I started temples and deity worship. The same principle should still be followed. Whatever money is collected should be spent for Krishna and not a farthing for sense gratifications. This is Bhagavat principle. So, interesting how Prabhupada is stressing how one should live simply, only have a minimum amount of finance. We wonder, is there something very glorious about poverty? Something very glorious about impoverishment? Is there something very spiritual about having little? Yes and no. We realize we must always be able to simplify everything. Whether we are having a lot of finance, a lot of service, many things to do, that at the end of the day, there must be simplicity. Because without sufficient simplicity, then we'll have a mindset that will be fruitative, too attached, we'll see ourselves as the proprietor. And so we end up with the original disease of thinking that we are in control and that we are to enjoy and lord over all that we survey. And so much of our original sickness that keeps surfacing in different ways is we want to bump Krishna out of the way. We want to put ourselves there as the all-worshipable. And so basically material life is into different combinations and permutational arrangements. People are trying somehow to experience enjoyment based on transitory and relative considerations. So, not that we are to be masochists, sadists, not that we are to avoid happiness, avoid pleasure. We're not trying to run away from some bandhas, from relationships, and from happiness. The ruchi, the taste is always integrally there. We're always looking for some pleasures. We're pursuing some deeper connections. The question is, where are we looking, and how are we focusing? And what are the consequences based on what we are aligning ourselves with? So in general, as we simplify our lives, then we have less intrusion of so many commodities and so many things intervening with our crying out for Krishna, with our being desperate and destitute. So sometimes Krishna literally takes away. Sometimes he gives special mercy and he intervenes and he takes away. He helps someone. But sometimes the same Krishna, to help somebody, arranges to give them things. For some people, their great challenge is when Krishna takes away. For others, when Krishna gives. Some people can be very devotional as long as they don't have anything. And then as soon as they start acquiring things, they get an inheritance or somehow a little business they're doing begins to turn over and finances start coming. So for some people, that becomes their greatest disturbance because it takes them away from now honoring their spirituality. Now they get so distracted, so caught up, so involved, so absorbed, and just dealing with trying to make more money and trying to establish what they do have, Krishna consciousness gets thrown out the window. And so, therefore, you can definitely see that a more complex life has been directly an assault against their spiritual progression. For other people, it's the opposite. That as long as things are convenient, as long as they have assets, as long as somehow Krishna is providing so many things, then they are excited, they're exhilarated, they're happy to do service, they're thanking Krishna constantly. And then one day, Krishna arranges to take away. Now the same person loses their zeal, loses enthusiasm, even begins to get angry at Krishna. Not ready to do services, not ready to engage in their sadhana, because they were being too motivated by just the happiness and just the externalities and the physicality. And then once those things are not in place, then their Krishna consciousness, which was quite cosmetic, doesn't kick in. And now they're so much caught up in deeper modes of material nature. So Krishna will definitely allow Maya to test us and to take away sometimes and to give directly and indirectly as a way to see what our real quality is. And even more than that is that Krishna will allow Maya to test every single devotee specifically where they're weak. Our biggest challenges will automatically, obviously come in the areas where there's weakness. So we have to be clever and honest and take inventory to notice what particular areas are we slacking in our devotional service. We all know ourselves, although we try to fool our own selves sometimes. And so specifically where we're weak, that is where Maya is going to try to capitalize of weakness to cause some destabilization. For some people, the weakness is money. So it's a big issue. So Maya is going to try to cause some bewilderment in that area. For some people, the greatest disturbance, greatest weakness, is that they just get this big, big ego. So they're just so much into distinction and adoration. And they'll do almost anything just to get some honor, get distinction. And so Maya will make an offer. And someone else, they are so much struggling with various types of issues. And so Maya is just going to come right in, whatever those issues are, in general, and to see if we'll leave Krishna based on something that can be offered. So Maya does a wonderful job. Maya is an equal opportunity employer. Maya doesn't care how long you've been chanting Hare Krishna, what gender you're in, the part of the world you're in, what your service is. Maya says, I have a job for you. Are you ready?
Huh? Or like somebody knocking on your on the door, huh? And they're requesting you come in. And so you say, well, I'm busy. No problem, I'll wait. So, can you come back? Yeah, I'll come back. Come back later and knock again. Can I come in? Says you again. It's not a good time. Mine is so consistent. We keep knocking. Do you want to invite me in now? Aren't you lonely? Aren't you angry? Don't you need things? I have so much to offer. Just come and take a little look. So nature is, in our conscience, we often rationalize something. And we just let my in just a little. And that's all that's needed. Because once we start rationalizing, then the tendency is to begin to rationalize more. And the presence, Maya's presence, becomes more and more dominant. It's rare that somebody says, somebody wakes up and says, today I am going to fall into big Maya. It's rare. It doesn't happen usually like that. But usually it happens by general minimizing, cutting corners, rationalizing, and after a while, we have rationalized ourselves into a deep mess. And then we become bewildered and shocked to see to what degree that we have rejected some of our basic principles, to what degree that we have entered into a lower ebb of consciousness. And so it all happens by gradual giving in and not having sufficient fear of the Maya. And so very significant in being able to progress in our devotional life is having a greater understanding and fear of Maya while simultaneously acquiring a greater awareness and appreciation of the goal. Both things must go hand in hand. We're just running away from things. Just, you know, this is just furtive religion where we're trying to approach God, the Godhead, because we want some relief from the interferences that are imposing upon our sense gratification. Many times people are pursuing religiosity because they've tried so many things. So they're thinking, let me try the God stuff now. I mean, maybe this will work. And so they are pursuing a God-conscious activity, but really completely based on fruitive concerns. They're mainly frustrated that their material achievements are not happening the way they would like. And so they're thinking, well, let me ingratiate, let me flatter, let me somehow pay some dues to God, and maybe things will come better. So it's still egocentricity, it's still self-centered, it's still based on proprietorship and materialism. But still, as Bhagavatam says, akama sava kama va moksha kama udavati, that one, whatever their situation is, they should still approach Krishna. But still it's foolish if a person is having so much entanglement in material energy and they're trying to connect with, you know, with transcendence. It's a contradiction. So when Maya is offering, sometimes we have to be bold. And we have to say, okay, you want to come in, Maya, all right, come in, let's see what you have. What can you produce? What can you offer? You know, the mind is so funny. The mind is accepting and rejecting. Sankalpa vikalpa. It is full of craziness. It's like having an enemy right near us constantly, just waiting for you to slip so it can attack you. In the conditioned state, the mind is probably like this. So, sometimes, instead of considering, we have to say, okay, what do you have? And then we just walk our minds through the situation. Maya says, well, why don't you go to Krishna consciousness and why don't you go and do this thing, do that. And then you think, yeah, but if I do this, this will be the consequences. No. And if I try this, I've done that already. No. And if I consider this, I see the results, and then you realize, okay, Maya, get out of here. I'm not interested. So sometimes we have to really to grab have a greater grip and control of what's going on in our minds. And so instead of being enticed by things that are being offered, You have to look at it and think. Now, if I follow this particular plan, this will be the result. It will take me away from my Krishna consciousness. I will not have a chance for chanting, not a chance for reading, associating with the devotees. No way. Not interested. And Maya says, well, what about, you know that old boyfriend used to have, old girlfriend? You say, yes. And I remember the consequences of what it was like. Sometimes Maya will just give you the flashbacks of something that was happening in your life or some possibility and only presenting a certain aspect of it. So Maya's reminding you, don't you remember what it was, what he was like, what she was like? But then Maya's not giving you all the suffering, all the anxiety that was a part of that situation also. And so it's trying to trick you, entice you in different ways. And you realize, no, I know what that'll end up into. I'm not into that. And so Maya says, well, just try a little bit of this thing, that thing. You realize that we're, what? As we come into devotional service, we're somewhat like addicts. See, more and more people getting addicted these days. Alcohol, drugs, all kinds of things. Eating disorders, all sorts of things. So, one's energies have to go somewhere, and people are looking for pleasure, happiness, and also expressing their frustrations in different ways. So now, an addict, somebody's trying to get off the drug, get away from the cigarettes, get away from the alcohol, they also have to be so careful now in regards to their associations and in regards to what's in their environment, because they have such a tendency to go back or to reconnect with the drugs, with such a habit. And so for quite some time, one has to be extremely careful, because it is so easy to go back into what has been a previous habit. We have been for many, many lifetimes addicted to sense gratification in all kinds of expressions. And for most people, in most of this life, they've also been controlled, enslaved by the senses, by the vegas, vatsa vega, manasakrodhavi, jiva vega, mudara pastavi. They've been so much imprisoned by sense gratification. And now, in this life, a part of this life, we're trying to say no to the addictions. So even though sometimes the activity may be checked or stopped, still so much of the desire and the seed is still there and can be rekindled. One is not careful. So the addict has to be really careful, really mindful of reminding him or herself what it's like when they were taken and controlled so heavily by the addiction, so that they will be careful not to slide back into it. And they have to be constantly keeping in mind the goal that they're trying to attain now. Become genuinely sober from now on. But again, it's still difficult, because the urge and the tendencies are there. The flashbacks are there. The enticements are there. So, what is one of the stronger ways that somebody gets off an addiction? What's some ways how a person can be successful? Okay, someone goes through the pain of going through the physiological, psychological symptoms after just stopping. It's one way, yes?
Substitution, some different types.
Substitution, what is Paramdhusta Navarta today? We transform, we substitute the energy that's going into something unhealthy, something that's progressive, positive. What's other ways?
Association.
Yes. It can be very difficult trying to wean oneself off a habit. And then with association comes reinforcement, clarification. Any other ways?
Understanding the harm that such addiction causes.
Understanding the harm. So all of these are there. Yes.
Taking the medicine on a regular basis.
And
also trying to find out what caused it, what was the basis for it.
Okay. Trying to get to the root of what is really behind it. All of these things. Getting to the root to see what the source is so it can be weeded out once and for all. understanding the gravity of it, so that one really wants to avoid it. Getting good association, that it energizes a person to move away from it. Doing some of the physical things is necessary, cold turkey. But even more important is the addict being able to be guided, associate, and have a role model of someone who has had that experience, who's been there, and who has given up the attachment. This gives greater strength than anything else, because when the addict tries to go to cold turkey, sometimes the pain is so much and they give up. When they're trying to be concerned about the fear of what it was like, sometimes the desire for it is even stronger than the desire, you know, to avoid it. Sometimes understanding the root cause, still one can intellectually understand, but still not have the strength to make a difference. All these things are analogous to our devotional life, devotional creeper. We can have tremendous intellectual understanding of the dangers of sense gratification, even tremendous understanding of, you know, what our siddhanta is. We can know so much and still be so addicted, still fall prey. We can try all kind of ways to understand the root cause of our getting into this material world. It can go on and on, so many things. We can have various types of association, but somehow, if the association isn't somehow pulling us to a point where we become more aware of what is accessible, where we begin to have more realization of what is possible, and where we begin to become more loved and protected by a culture of devotion or by an environment that helps us to move more toward that goal, and while we have examples to let us know this is possible. See, when someone who is very addicted is trying to get off, they're going through all these complexities. And so sometimes they give in and give in because they feel this is just too hard, I can't do it. And then somebody's trying to encourage them, their mother, their friend, is trying to encourage them. But in the back of their mind, they're thinking, you don't know my pain. You don't know what I'm really going to. Because, you haven't taken a drug. You haven't been addicted to the alcohol. And so you're telling me, just get out of it, just rise above it. But you don't really know how difficult it is. Or somebody's trying to get off, but then they're cheating from time to time. And sometimes one who doesn't know their situation will think that they're okay. But someone who has kind of been there, but now has been clean for a long time, or haven't gone back, that person acts as the greatest catalyst because, one, the person is encouraging, being kind, but also imposing in a forceful but necessary and healthy way to pull the person up to a higher standard, and letting them know how it is possible by the fact that they've been there and they know the pain that it goes through, they know the difficulty, and they also know the cheating that one may involve himself in. So when one is backsliding, one is beginning to deviate, or one is beginning to slide, then they're able to reach out and help. So this is also very analogous to our own spiritual life. That if we constantly are trying to rise above certain patterns, certain attachments, but we don't have a strong enough desire to get out of it, that's going to be a problem. If we don't have a strong enough fear, that's going to be a problem. If we don't have association that's constantly reminding us, that's going to be a problem. But the biggest problem is that if we don't see enough examples of the theology working, that's going to be a huge problem. In the back of one's mind, one is going to feel less enthusiastic, less determined, less focused to try to reach the goal. We see in the basic way. We see how there was a time we were distributing only a few number of books. This is just a few back to Godheads. And then some devotees started distributing a lot of back to Godheads. And so then other devotees think, oh, it's possible. I can also do it. And then after a while, many devotees are distributing back to Godheads. Then some devotees started distributing some big books. And then some devotees are thinking, it's possible. So I can learn how to do that also. And then they become knowledgeable how to do. And then somebody is finding out how to make money selling paintings or selling incense or whatever. And then someone says, oh, so you're bringing a lot of capital to the temple. Oh, let me see how that works. Let me try in my temple. And so then it picks up in such ways. in community, so many things happen based on, of course, the normative patterns that are dominant in the community, and it affects each individual individually, and affects us collectively. This is natural. We are engaged constantly in associations of such. When someone is in Maya, they're not just hurting themselves, but they're impacting upon the environment. Because we associate, we are influencing each other. When someone is quite enthusiastic, they are also impacting upon the environment. They are making it easier for others because they are creating more of an atmosphere of the devotion. And it has its way of cutting or chopping at some of the negativity that tries to sneak in or that comes in. So when Prabhupada is emphasizing here about simplicity, he's helping us to focus more on the fact that we have certain very high goals, and if we can just keep focused, keep determined, be less and less distracted by many complexities, then there's more opportunity that we will be able to be energized by the Shastra, by Sadhu Sangha, by Guru, etc. And the more that there are so many issues we have to deal with in our lives, then it's risky, because our energies then get so dispersed out, there's a chance that we can't focus. Breaking through the three modes of material nature, acquiring higher realization, means that there must be a strong focus. But there cannot be strong focus without strong faith. Shraddha is so important. But faith is not something that we can fake, really. You can fake it in the environment for a while, but to yourself you can't fake it. So strong faith has to do with several things. First, it has to do with what has happened in the past. What has gone on in our lives in the past has now produced a certain present. It's like karma, prarabdha karma, aparabdha karma, mature karma, immature karma. And then that which is still in the bead form, the seed form, it's all unfolding in different ways. So according to what has happened, we have experienced in the past, it's now having a particular effect on what we're processing and what our aspirations are, etc., for the present. So if our past has been somewhat incoherent, if our past has been rocky, if our past has been shaky, then it's going to usually mean some difficulties that we are dealing with in the present. And if too much of our present is not consolidated, is not firm, then our future, which is really just an extension, extending the present, is also not going to be so wonderful. So our faith will be very challenged. There have been issues in the past that's now caused us to be somewhat faithless in the present. And without strong faith, we can't break through the various modes of material nature, but strong faith comes from good things happening to you, around you, that reinforces your faith and then has you excited about anticipation of the future. So sometimes we get a low culture of trust and a low culture of faith that can be very devastating. But blind faith will just bring blindness. Blind faith is based on just kind of a sentimentalism. It will bring later blind confusion, blind anxiety, great anxiety, because it's one extreme, it will produce another extreme. But so faith gets stronger and stronger as we are having things happening around us, to us, that enhances the faith, that gives us reason to now make that extra leap. You know, somebody has faith about something, and they keep on having faith, and nothing's happening, they'll lose faith. It's just a natural order of things. If we are not applying the science efficiently with weeds and apparatus, and then, or just repressing rather than transforming, we will not get the kind of results that will bring us to a stronger and stronger faith. It will be almost the opposite. One will be sort of mechanically engaged in that devotional service while the mind is going more and more to other places, other areas, because of the fact that the ruchi, the taste, isn't existing. As the taste comes, as we go deeper, Krishna consciousness is not like some kind of material society or material arrangement where one is just trying to acquire more. And Prabhupada is kind of helping us with this in this purport. But it's really about going deeper and deeper into even what is already there. And so the material scheme is aggregating more and more things, more and more commodities, more and more sense gratification activities and arrangements, with the idea that maybe now one will become happy. So have to get more. It's like now in the world, the top 5% richest people in the world, they control more than the bottom 95. So you have a situation worldwide where literally some people are getting richer and richer and richer by the globalizations of markets, globalization of technologies. People are getting richer and richer and richer. They're super rich. And for most people, they're struggling. Majority of people, even middle class, they have a job where they can make money, have some food, have some transportation, so they can go to work, and have some housing, have some food, so they can keep the body fit, so they can keep going to work, making money for somebody else. Hmm? Somebody's definitely making big money, but the average person is not making the big money. The average person is just kind of surviving, struggling, and having a hard time even doing that. And in some parts of the world, even harder, because there's a smaller and smaller middle class. It's like the wealthy, or the super wealthy, and basic poor. Civilization is in big trouble when they have that, cultures. But that's becoming the case in many places in the world. So, when you get so much wealth, it doesn't even mean anything anymore in terms of, how do you really deal with, multi-millions and billions of dollars? You can only eat so much. You can only sleep so much. You can only, use so much. After a while, you just get stocked up in different ways. But what happens is that often people who have so much, they want more and more, because it comes to a point where they want more money, they want to corner more markets, and then it comes to a matter of power. Hmm? They want to be able to influence so many situations based on that power. And the demons especially want this, because the demons, their main desire is how to usurp the powers of Krishna. So they want control. They want to really have everything resting upon them. They want to be able to have the power of life and death on others. They want to be able to influence countries, influence continents. And sometimes some of them do. So this becomes very difficult. And that when one is feeling that they are too much in control, then what's the need for Krishna? It's the opposite. When one is feeling so much in control, then the tendency is to think less and less about taking shelter of Krishna. So Prabhupada talks about renunciation and the importance of taking sannyas. And that sannyas is not just a matter of changing dress. Krishna consciousness really means no eating, no sleeping, no mating, and no defending. Ooh. Hmm? It means that we eat wonderfully for Krishna. Hmm? For ourselves, no. But for Krishna, we do all of these things wonderfully. Hmm? Eating, preparing, cooking, wonderfully for Krishna. It means no sleeping. We sleep wonderfully. We must try to get quality sleep so that we can maintain Krishna's body nicely. Hmm? That we must engage in mating, where that is the ashram, with the idea that we mate for Krishna. And so, defending also, that for our own account, we're not so concerned. But for Krishna, Krishna's service, Krishna's devotees, then we defend. So in this way, we become more and more in the world, but not of the world, because our Krishna consciousness is distinctly based on how we are becoming like the residents of the spiritual world, which determines how serious our claim is for going back to Godhead. It's not that we just do all kind of things and somehow we leave this body and then we're going to go back to the spiritual world. No, it means that we have began to be unaffected by the duality. We have begun to remain loyal, faithful, regardless to all kind of hell going on anywhere, within our house, within our temple, within the country, within the institution, whatever. Because material life is material life. Dealing with material energy is dealing with material energy. Material energy is always going through all kinds of transitions. That's there. And so, when our priority remains fixed, we become mad, we have loyalty and greed, we're crying, some of the content for Krishna, and nothing is more important for us than our spirituality, then we are reclaiming our original heritage. We're becoming sane again, and we're becoming candidates for upliftment, going back to the spiritual kingdom. A sign that we're serious is to what degree we are in preparation. It's like I'm traveling now to about 30 or so different countries. You're passionately running here, there, a couple of days. Now, some places I have to have a visa. Some environments, you know, the weather is totally different. It's very hot. Some places it's very cold. So the sign of being serious about traveling, if I go to the airport, and I just go in the airport, and I go to the counter, and I stand in the line, I come up to the counter, and I say, well, this plane is going to Melbourne. Should I go to Melbourne tomorrow? Lady says, yes. I say, I heard he's leaving at 8:30. She says, yes. He says, well, I want to go. She says, no problem, sir. Bring your ticket. I said, I don't have a ticket. She says, what? I says, no, what? Didn't you say this plane goes to Melbourne? Yes. At least at 8:30? Yes. So I want to go. The plane is going to go. You're getting people who want to go. So I want to go. She says, sir, where's your ticket? I said, I don't have a ticket. He said, well, I'm not a serious traveler. I don't have a ticket. Another place, I need a visa. I have to have my passport. And I say, I want to travel. I want to go to Brazil. So as an American citizen, I need a visa. So I said, well, where's your passport? Where's your visa? Do you have a visa? I said, no. Where's your passport? I left it at home. He looked at me. Get out of this line. It was obvious that I'm not serious about traveling. So it means I have to have my documents, have to have things in order. And according to how serious I am, my bags are packed and according to what I'm going to be doing, where I'm going to go. So we're trying to go outside this material world, we're trying to go back home. It's a real sign that we're serious is how much we have things in place that shows that our quality is of such that we want, you know, to go back. And so there's no duality or maya in the spiritual world. There's no putting Krishna and the divine couple as the second or third priority. This is why we have to be very careful to take notice of whatever we're doing. How much can we genuinely offer that at the lotus feet of Gaur Nitai? And so we have to maintain body and soul together. That's there. We have so many secondary things to do, but each secondary thing that we do should enhance the primary. Otherwise, it's part of our maya. If it doesn't somehow stimulate and encourage and enhance the primary, then we are cheating ourselves because we're interfering with what we're really about in this particular lifetime. So, no eating, no sleeping, no mating, no feeding, but all for Krishna. And so renunciation isn't just a matter of stopping things. It's not a matter of avoidance. As Prabhupada says, it's not a matter of being afraid of certain or running away from certain social responsibilities. In many ways, renunciation has very little to do with what we give and what we do, in essence. It has more to do with what we're still holding back on. Just like me giving a kind of a mundane example. Say somebody comes into the temple, and one person puts in the hundi, puts in, $1,000. Another person comes in and he puts $5. Or the person who put the $1,000, they had so much money. And that $1,000 is like chump change to them. It wasn't a big endeavor. It wasn't a big commitment. It wasn't a big tax on them. The person who put in $5, they only had $6 or $7. And so even though it was a smaller amount, it was a greater sacrifice. Because what they've given is huge in terms of what they're still having. So Krishna is Atmaram. He's not really looking so much at what we're giving only. That's only a small part of it. But he's noticing, what are you still holding back? And so our surrender has a lot to do with what is still being held back. See? Because as Krishna has given us something, as caretakers, he's taking notice to see how much we are claiming proprietorship. Or how much are we really being the caretakers and offering it back to him. And so where we are more and more genuinely offering back, and everyone has their own different adhikar, different potentials and different ability is there. And Krishna is observing in the heart and he's noticing. You're trying to bribe me again. You are presenting something, but really you are holding back so much more. You are, yes, doing something nicely, but so much more you can do. He knows our capacity. And so in this way, we have to be more honest with ourselves and look at what's happening with our time, our energy, our mind, to what degree. If Krishna is standing right next to us, if Prabhupada, our guru, is right next to us, how often would we be embarrassed about what we're doing, what we're saying, what we're arranging? How often would we be in anxiety thinking, oh my God, guru's watching me? We'll be disturbed because we realize, shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be saying this, shouldn't be thinking this. Or to what degree will we feel secure and to the degree we have so much stuff going on that we know, even when we have doubt whether the spiritual master would be pleased, then we have to make some adjustments in our lives. Because this is what is happening. Everything we do is being watched by the super soul, is being monitored by the Bhagavatam says by the sun, by the moon, it's being monitored by the water, it's being monitored by so many different personalities. So there's no such thing actually as a secret. There's no such thing as cheating. Not really. Because when we cheat, we're just arranging for our own chastisement, or we're arranging for our own for something to inauspicious to happen to us, because everything is being noticed and registered in various ways. And we'll come back in some way. The converse of that we should never really feel, too lonely, too blown out, too frustrated, too much in anxiety, because Krishna is there and is eager to assist us in his own way, in his own time, based on what is best for us. So renunciation here, genuine renunciation, is just becoming natural again, where we are removing so much of the acculturation that has come to us lifetime after lifetime. And now we are fixed, and this the Krishna consciousness is our priority. I'll tell the story, then I'll stop. There was once a Vrihastha couple of Ramanujacharyas who he seemed to favor like anything. And some of the sannyasis, they were pissed off, they were disturbed. They are renunciates, they are living in the mosque. Why Ramanuja is favoring this household couple? So Ramanuja, understanding their mentality, their minds, he wanted to help them. So once he sent this brahmachari from the mouth to the home of this grihastha couple, husband was gone, the wife was taking rest. So the brahmachari was still in her bangles, the jewelry and things. So she was resting and she woke up, and here this the audience from the mosque who was stealing from her. And so, as she woke up and saw what was going on, and she turned over, and then the Brahmachari ran away. When she came in, she asked her husband if there was some problem in the mom, if there was some difficulty, some financial problem. And her husband inquired why she was asking like that. She said, well, today, while I was taking rest, one of the renunciates, one of the Brahmacharis from the mosque, had come. And he was taking my bangles. So, before Ramanuja did send the Brahmachari there, he had the same Brahmachari to go where a group of sannyasis and renunciates were. And he took their clothes and he mixed it all up. He had some of them. And when they got out of taking bath, they were like furious. They were angry. They were ready to. They were literally so intense that Ramanuja himself had to come and to cool them down. So now this same Brahmachari was sent to this householder's house, and he took these, taking the bangles and things. So the husband was asking the wife what happened, and she says, "Well, you know, she woke up and turned, and then the Brahmachari ran." So the husband, he was disturbed. You know, why did you chase him away? He says, "No, I wasn't chasing him away. I was turning so he could get the bangles on the other side." So here, in case they had many things, but they were not attached. And Ramanuja was favoring them because of the quality of their consciousness. But the sannyasis, they had seemingly given up so much, but there was still so much attachment. And so it wasn't a case of what someone has given up or what someone has. It's a matter of the consciousness, of how one is identifying as a proprietor. Sometimes the Nagababa, sometimes the yogis, they can be more attached to where they put their mat, be more attached to who's going to bathe first than somebody is to their palace. And sometimes they will curse you. Sometimes the yogis, they will even curse you because they will be so angry. Even though they've gone through all such heavy austerities and renunciation, and even performed so many yajnas, and even did so much, that still the anger, the lust, the proprietorship, and the ego can be very strong. So it's not something so glorious that they are giving up everything and sometimes, you know, living like monkeys. But what is glorious is what's going on in the consciousness. So this verse is helping us to appreciate a little more what real renunciation is. It's not just avoiding. There's one last story, then I'll stop. Once we were in, what country? West Africa. Brahmananda, myself, when Brahmananda was a sannyasi. We had this program, big program. It was mostly, you know, with the Gujarati community there. And it was in a big auditorium. So after the program was over, people were coming up bringing things to us. It was me and him, and then one Mayavadi sannyasi. And we were all three, you know, there, speaking something. Then after it was over, people started bringing things up. And as they brought things to the Mayavadi sannyasi, he was literally disturbed, not accepting, and getting kind of almost like angry. People were bringing food, they were bringing money, and he was like telling them, "No, no." The more people were bringing us, the more we were just raking it. And so, it may look strange to some people. You have three different sannyasis, and the two of us were just, "Yeah, come on." You know, we're looking at, we're going to take all this vegetable and fruit, and have the brahmacharis and devotees take it, and to the temple. So we can, you know, use it for devotional service and for Krishna. And so he was thinking, "Yeah, I'm a sannyasi, I'm not supposed to touch money. I'm not supposed to touch things like that. He's a Mayavadi." So, as we're thinking that we are the controllers, then we enter our likes, our dislikes, our having, our not having. But as we're thinking that, how can we serve Krishna? Then our conception is, how can I use this for Krishna's service? If it can be used, okay, then we use it. And if not, then we reject it, based on such. Not just a matter of just rejection and avoidance. That is not a sign of renunciation. Hare Krishna. Any question? So we're looking at this idea of no eating, no sleeping, no mating, defending, and that obviously we're active by nature, we're pleasure seekers, but it should be done for Krishna. Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, we sometimes say Krishna's testing, or we sometimes say Maya's testing. Is it interchangeable, or is Krishna testing? All the tests that we experience, does Krishna somehow personally do it, or does he always do it via the Maya?
Both things is there. Krishna is indirectly arranging all the testing, giving the permission for Maya, or for his agents, sometimes even the demigods. But it's all based on Krishna's, Krishna's arrangement. So we can say Maya, we can say Krishna, we can interchange, but it's really the same. Because every test is really a chance to accelerate, to glorify Krishna, if we use it in the proper way. Any other question?
You said in the class that we have to use force but in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes as an organizer, as a manager, we have taken the things done around the place. So how do we actually, to what extent actually we have to use the force, but again, keeping a healthy way, how do we actually know actually where we are down?
Our human and selfish nature, whether we're devotees or not, is that people want the best for themselves. So sometimes people have to be encouraged more to understand how something is beneficial for them. And then there's more chance that they will take advantage of it. And sometimes people have to be, protected. It's like especially with children. They have to be encouraged, guided, and also protected so that they will not harm themselves. Our own examples become most important, even more than what we say. And also to try to create some boundaries. It doesn't so much impose on someone, because anybody gets imposed on too much, even if it's something good for them, they just back away. They feel, pressured. But at the same time, if we're just connecting with each other and tolerating each other's kind of deviations and reinforcing the deviations or weaknesses, then that's not healthy association. Healthy association is someone's example and their life and the way they talk and deal with you encourages you to come to a higher standard, to try to improve in your consciousness. And that's real friendship and real association. But friendship an association that helps each person to feel that their weaknesses are okay, then that's not very good. It's not really giving the best of being a servant of the servant, being concerned and helping the person's highest interests. Healthy association is not condescending, but it kind of encourages you in such a way to raise your standard. And so as managers, we have a duty to first try to maintain higher standard ourselves so that we're not speaking one thing and acting differently, and then to try to see how to encourage others based on their propensities, their tendencies, and trying to understand their needs but keeping focus and being chased toward the goals. Any other question?
How do we enjoy this? How do we put in an offensive mentality because we
discriminate? How do we? It's very hard to be totally free of offenses. I mean, just the fact that we look at the deities, we're not fully convinced that this is the Lord, is also offensive. It's the fact that we're chanting a holy name, we're not hearing Krishna's flute and his ankle bells. That means some offenses are going on. But there are things that we can be more conscious of and as we study the scripture and try to honor, Vaishnava etiquette. But in our minds, we should always be praying to Krishna to please help us to be a better servant. Please help us to be free of anarthas and weeds and offenses. Please help us to do the right thing in the right way. And we'll get more and more guidance according to how serious that our desire is. Mm-hmm. And where, when we are making rather serious offenses, well, you know, Krishna will help us to see that we're acting improper or doing something wrong so that we can change. You see, everything is always given to us. It's just that we have been, for many lifetimes, we've been expertly finding ways to avoid Krishna's mercy. And so really our whole Krishna consciousness is just giving up our insanity. Stop finding expert ways in how to avoid Krishna's protection, His love, His mercy. And this is why simple life is also good. Because, again, simplicity can help us to become less, you know, what do you call it, interfering with Krishna's plan. That's also where the faith comes in. When the faith is weak, then it's hard to just think, well, Krishna's going to take care of me. Effort is important, but grace comes. But it's hard to accept that the grace is going to come when our faith is too weak. But when our faith is stronger, we do the right thing, and Krishna will arrange everything even better than we were planning. We've all seen that sometimes. We just really committed ourselves. We had some plans, but then we really put it over the lotus feet of Gornitai, of the Lord. And we saw that what ultimately happened was even so much better than if we had just planned it and worked it through ourselves, every detail. The greatest things that happened in this movement, they actually happened in spite of us anyway. The biggest, most wonderful things that happens in the movement, they happen in spite of us. But still, as devotees, we try, and then Krishna facilitates. If it was just based on ourselves, we'd be in trouble. But as devotees put forth the effort, like the sparrow who's thinking of drinking up the ocean to get her eggs back. So the focus is there, the determination is there. And then Guru to come. So much of our existence is doing the best based on our situation and then understanding that Krishna will fulfill His promise. That He will maintain what we lack. I'm sorry, He will maintain what we have and He will carry what we lack. But faith is still again necessary to let Krishna gradually begin to fulfill in where we're lacking. ISKCON found the child His divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Siddhar Bhupati. So one thing, so I'll give the second part of the class this night at 6:30 on depression and some things about music community.